This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Yes, Resource Centre, good afternoon. This is Frida Liu. Can ideas be considered intellectual property? What are the opportunities that Malaysian companies should be exploring in the area of IP? We're getting the update on intellectual property and how you can protect or leverage your company's IP with Geeta Kandaya from CAS International. She's been here before. Welcome back, Geeta.
Thanks,
so,
Frida.
You know, happy monkey year.
Okay. Same to you.
Our PM keeps talking about innovation being important for growth of the nation. So how is Southeast Asia and more importantly Malaysia performing in the global IP index?
Thanks, Frida. So the global IP index was actually prepared by the Global Intellectual Property Center in the US. And they assessed 31 countries. They looked at all the jurisdictions and taking into account patent, trademark, copyright protection, limitations thereof of each law in the country, trade secrets, market access of the products into the market, enforcement rate and membership into international IP-related treaties. So assessing those factors, they then rated these countries, these 31 countries, on how are they rated in terms of intellectual property. Southeast Asia, countries were selected to be rated.
Right.
And these were Thailand, Vietnam, Indonesia, Brunei, Malaysia, and Singapore.
Okay.
Which are 6 out of 10 countries that were rated. And the results are actually not very surprising.
Okay.
If Singapore is in the list, usually Singapore performs very well in most lists.
Yes.
And Singapore was actually top 5 out of the 31 countries.
Right.
So top 5 were UK, US, Germany, France and Singapore. Mm-hmm. Singapore scored 25.38% in the index. Mm-hmm. And that was the highest among all Southeast Asian countries. And this was due to its very strict IP legislations.
Okay.
They have adequate and effective enforcement. You would know when you go to Singapore that buying a copyright, a pirated CD is pretty much impossible. So that's because of IP rights enforcement. Actions against piracy and prevention are very, very strong. Copyright infringement to web hosting, streaming and linking are all actually difficult. Copying through that is difficult. Mm. So, and also Singapore is very involved in international treaties. They've ratified most of the international treaties. So that's one of the reasons Singapore is rated quite high in the IP index.
All right. And okay, so after that, what was the next ASEAN country?
So the next ASEAN country, thankfully, it's Malaysia.
Right.
We're scoring 14.62. We're still quite far behind from the 25.38 that Singapore scored. And we were number 13 out of the 31 countries. So that's considered to be an average score. Mm. You pretty much performed mid-range, right? Mm. Out of 31 countries, you get number 30. 13 out of 31. Yeah, reverse of those numbers. So why did we perform in that manner? Well, it was found that enforcement could be improved in Malaysia. And there were exertion to some treaties, but not enough. There were not many treaties that we entered into that had strong and substantial IP provisions in the agreements. And so this might be boosted up later on because we are now concluding the TPPA, and that has a huge chapter on intellectual property. And one of the requirements is there must be high enforcement of intellectual property once you join the TPPA. So our position might actually increase. Over the years, we've amended some laws and we've amended copyright law, for example, to include penalties, higher penalties for unlawful web hosting, streaming and linking. And even though there were changes to the law, the committee that assessed and analyzed the data while delivering the index found that there were still high levels of piracy. Mm. So that's why we're mid-range, but still doing better than Brunei, Indonesia, Vietnam and Thailand.
Okay. Now, what examples of Malaysian companies that have done well in this area and where are the gaps?
In Malaysia, innovation is up and coming. A lot more companies are becoming more aware of it over the past 10 years. Mm. And it helps that government is actually encouraging this by providing grants, a lot of talks and seminars. The Malaysian IP office is encouraging IP valuation. And some people don't even know what IP is. So if you're promoting IP valuation, they try to learn what IP is itself. In Malaysia, the top innovating companies or actually corporations are actually universities. Mostly universities and research institutes are very active in research and development in the country. Take, for instance, the top 30 patent applications mm-hmm. in the past year, which was in 2015. So we recently got a top 30 list, and 20 corporations in the list are Malaysian universities and research institutes. So research institutes are, for example, Malaysian Palm Oil Board. Mm. The remainder 10 are made up from individual inventors, some government-linked corporations like MIMOS and Telecom Malaysia Berhad. And there are a scattering of companies, which are Centurion Berhad's. Mm. The companies that are on the list is Pixart Imaging from Penang, and Top Glove, and TPM Biotech.
Okay.
So most big players in their own industry, I'm talking about the ones that didn't make it to the list, they're still very innovative. So the innovative companies are usually top players in the industry. So you've got a lot of glove manufacturing companies, the top players, Top Glove, Hartha Lega, Supermax, constantly innovating in their field to stay as a market leader.
Yeah. And so it correlates.
Totally, because if you as soon as you improve your production facility, your machinery that you're using for any products you're producing, you would want to seek protection to make sure your competitor cannot use that invention. Mm. So it is really correlate. You, as a market leader, you would have more patents.
You know, what are the opportunities that Malaysian companies should be exploring in the area of IP?
It really depends on what the company is involved in. Different companies have different intellectual property assets, and intellectual property assets that are strong are important to different companies. So, for example, a company that's involved in the food and beverage industry, trademarks are very important to these companies. Mm. That's how the layperson selects where to go to eat, where to go for coffee. So building on a good trademark is important, and then leveraging on the franchise model to expand that brand locally or abroad is important. Mm. So that's what is recommended for F&B. That in terms of opportunities in other industries for FMCG companies with fast-moving consumer goods, again, you're looking at brands. And the more developed the brands are, you're looking at leveraging on the brand by having product diversification.
Mm.
You can then produce different type of products under that brand because people recognize the brand and trust that brand. Other type of opportunities would be technology related. Mm-hmm. So for companies in the manufacturing industry, whatever product they're manufacturing, they will be constantly innovating. So as they innovate their production and the machinery they use in their business, they can actually protect it, and that would be an IP asset. Later on, they can either license that asset or utilize it to maintain a monopoly in the market.
It's very interesting when you talk about like with F&B and all that, and I think of Starbucks, right?
Mm-hmm.
When I go overseas and all that, it's like if I'm looking for a good cup of coffee, if I don't know the country well enough, that'll be my first benchmark, right? And you think, okay, at least the staff there should be able to speak English,
mm-hmm.
you know? So and you
some
know
some sort of assurance,
some sort of assurance, you know? And it's just like wow, how that just sort of gives it almost a slight relief when you see the logo.
Yes. You know? I think the same in McDonald's as well. You look at McDonald's, you're like so happy and civilized.
Right. Yes. Is McDonald's here? Is Starbucks here? You know, I mean, it's ironic, right, how that comes into play, right?
The Americans are very good at franchising. Mm. See, it's all from them. It's a great way to put your brand out there without investing, because you get franchisees to then invest in the brands.
So what are the questions Malaysian businesses should be asking when considering their IP and even the valuation of their IP? Is it from idea stage already?
We get that quite a lot. Can ideas be protected? And it's actually very good that they have enough awareness to even think about IP during the cultivation of the idea, the inception of the idea. But in short, the answer for whether ideas can be protected is no. It's too abstract.
Mm.
And that idea has to be reduced to substance.
Right.
So it has to be reduced to material form, depending on what idea is. If it's an idea to how to make something work and invent, that would be an invention. If it's an idea to present something, an advertising company, that might be a copyright because it's a display on a billboard. So depending on what the idea is, but it has to be reduced to substance. The abstract idea itself, the thought process, cannot be protected. So that's what companies should be thinking of when you're thinking of IP or creating IP. Mm. One is where do they go from the ideas itself. The other thing is most companies should actually take a rain check on what they have themselves, because most companies already have intellectual property assets. So, and a lot of companies have something unique about them, and they have a Kaizen attitude. Especially if the company is successful or on the road to being successful, they have an attitude of constantly improving their workflow, the processes in their business. And that could have improvements that could be protected. Minor improvements can still be protected, and each of it will have different intellectual property rights. For example, let's take a manufacturing company that produces gloves. Maybe there's cost-cutting measures they've taken, or there's modifications to current machinery to produce better yield, or improvements to improve the process time. It's a quicker way now to deliver the products. Or they have a machinery that utilizes less energy. So that's, again, cost saving. So all of these processes that they've improved can be protected, depending on what it is. But all of these give a competitive edge to that specific company over its competitors. So that it is crucial for them to actually protect that competitive edge. And that's when they have to start thinking about intellectual property rights, as soon as there's anything that in their company they're improving.
All right. And of course, we're going to talk about how things can go wrong, you know, scare you a little bit when companies don't protect their IP. We'll discuss that in just a moment with Geeta Kandaya from CAS International. Stay tuned. Resource Center, BFM 89.9.
Best Future Marketeers, BFM 89.9.
It's Resource Center. This is Frida Liu. We're going through updates on intellectual property with Geeta Kandaya from CAS International. You know, earlier on, we were discussing about how Malaysia performed the Global IP Index. 13 out of 31, not too bad. But for Southeast Asia, Singapore leads the top five. Never mind. We move on. You know, so we talk about IP as well, right? Now, what are some things that can go wrong, especially when companies don't protect their IP? What are the dangers?
For trademarks, it's not too bad. There are unregistered rights that the owner can rely on, and this is quite standard in Malaysia and abroad. However, for patents and industrial designs, unfortunately, there's no such thing as unregistered right. So if you have a new invention, there's modifications or designs that you have created for your business, and you have not protected it, it is basically free for all to use. Or easily said, is a donation to the public.
Okay.
So there's no...
We're very good with that.
Sorry?
We're very good with that.
Yeah, donations. There's no monopoly over intellectual property assets if it's not protected. Mm. So the monopoly is where everyone wants a monopoly. That's where you get premium pricing, the value of your company increases, you get to actually stay ahead of your competitors. So you're actually seeking that monopoly. But without protection, you don't have that. We once actually had a client who was selling drinks in Malaysia. And the drinks was nothing new, but the manner in which it was presented, that packaging was new. The design of the bottle was very unique, and it took off really well. And soon they had a competitor selling drinks in that same unique shape as well. But because the client had not protected the design, they could not actually take an action against the competitor. So with inventions and designs, it has to be protected before it's launched into the marketplace. So that's a danger. It's a lot of new ideas are created, a lot of new inventions are created, creative designs, but it's launched before advice is obtained, professional advice is obtained. And with professional advice, a lot of cost savings can be saved, cost savings can be appreciated, and also people can stay ahead of the game.
Okay, now for the juicy bits. There were some interesting trademark brand-related cases heard in our local courts in 2015. A brief roundup about these cases.
Okay, let me talk about two cases. Okay. This one was actually about ownership dispute over the Polo brand. And, you know, we see the word Polo everywhere. And it's actually quite confusing. Does Ralph Lauren own Polo? Or does many other companies own Polo? So this case was actually an interesting case because it actually involved two trademarks which both incorporated the word Polo. It was Brilliant Rubber Goods, Sanjay and Berhad, taking the action against Santa Barbara Polo and Racket Club Management Incorporated. So the earlier one, BRG, Brilliant Rubber Goods, I'll call them BRG, has a registered trademark in Malaysia since 1981. And the other party, Santa Barbara Polo and Racket Club, also has a registered trademark in Malaysia since 1993.
Okay.
So actually, the first question the layperson asks is, how come both brands are allowed to coexist with
in
the
first
polo.
Place.
Yeah, how come Malaysian IP office allowed the registration? But it's a tricky one because brands, actually, if there's a lot of elements in the trademark and it's different from the prior registered mark, the IP office will allow it if it can be differentiated sufficiently. So anyway, BRG was not happy about coexisting. So they sought to actually cancel the trademark of the polo, the Santa Barbara Polo and Racquet Club.
But it's a long time. I mean, if you say 1993 or so, that's 20 years, almost 20 years later.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. So the case would have started earlier because it normally takes 4 to 5 years before last time to actually hear the case. And they actually tried to take an action against them in the IP office itself. That means try to oppose the applications, but they failed. So then they challenged the decision of the IP officer at court. So this process would have been going on for 5+ years because it involved the IP office and then the courts. So then in court, they submitted that the marks are actually really similar. The BRG's mark is just a polo in a box. But Santa Barbara's Polo and Racquet Club involves all those words and the word polo. And with a man on a horse as well. But the court felt that these marks are not confusingly or deceptively similar.
Okay.
And Santa Barbara Polo and Racquet Club is a genuine body and they actually have games running under this brand. So it's the word polo itself could be used by them as long as it's used as a whole. So Santa Barbara Polo and Racquet
Club. As a whole.
Yeah, so, not just with polo. So the BRG failed to take this action against the other party. It's very interesting because there's a lot of brands out there with the word polo. And I think another reason that came up about in this case is that polo is not so distinctive anymore when you have so many parties using the word polo.
And Ralph Lauren hasn't come into into play yet.
Yeah, Ralph Lauren has a lot of cases in many countries, a lot of cases in many countries against parties that use the word polo. They popularized it because we even did a case study on how polo came about, and it started with the polo shirts,
right?
And that's how it became a brand.
And
polo
it was
shirts.
It was him, I mean, basically,
he actually
popularized.
Yeah, popularized it. Started creating a lot of polo shirts, really nice designs, and all, and then started calling it polo. So he popularized it, but that polo shirts were already a descriptive word.
Yeah.
So for tennis, for people who wear it for tennis, people who wear it for polo as well, the sports itself. So that was an interesting case.
Okay.
And then the second case we have is to do with cigarettes. So two giants, Philip Morris and British Tobacco, were involved in this case. British Tobacco had a trademark parliament for cigarettes and registered trademark in Malaysia. And Philip Morris wanted to use that trademark for their cigarettes. They already were selling cigarettes under the same trademark in other countries. And they found that the Malaysian brand under British Tobacco was not being used. So they sought to cancel that trademark, that registered trademark in courts. Now, a trademark can be cancelled if it hasn't been used for 3 years consecutively. So they went under that ground of cancellation. And they got an investigation firm to actually explore whether have they been using it. So that investigation firm did a lot of investigation on are there actually products being sold online in the market? Are there advertisements on this brand out there? And the reports that were prepared by the firm reflected that the brand is not being used by British Tobacco, despite the fact that they've been renewing it for decades. I think they had it since 1973. So for decades, they had been renewing the trademark. Every 10 years, you can renew. So they've maintained the registration, but they have not used the trademark. They were successful. Philip Morris was successful to prove that there was no use and cancel the trademarks in court. So these two cases were actually quite prominent in the past year in the trademark field.
Okay, so what are some tips to implement so that, you know, I guess people don't get called up to the courts as well? I mean, what's something?
I mean, it's tips will be tough in terms of different IP rights. So I think the first tip, as a general advice for intellectual property rights, would be to assess what rights your company has. If you're growing, it's very important to build these intellectual property assets and protect them because that's where the value is when you want to sell the company, you want to expand to another country and so on. Second one would be get professional advice because sometimes just reading up on the subject, you'll be overlooking some issues that you might need advice on, especially from professionals. And the third one is to actually also keep an eye out for what competitors are doing. Mm. And this you can do through various databases, especially if you're in a technology field. You can do technology mining. You can find out what competitors are protecting their patents, what inventions they're coming up with, what brands they're coming up with. So there's a lot of information out there in the patent and IP databases that you can actually monitor your competitors, again, to see whether are they one step ahead.
And also to safeguard yourself.
Yeah,
because you don't want to spend time in court. You want to spend time building business.
Yes, yes, definitely.
So Geeta Kundaya from CAS International should be back next week talking about how if apps are patentable. So you got to stay tuned for that. I've been speaking to Geeta Kundaya from CAS International. This is Resource Center, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.